Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita Adi Lila chapter 4 text 156, which is actually Srimad Bhagavatam canto 10 chapter 44 text 14 translation and commentary by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Gopyastapa kimacharanyadamushya rupam.
Gopyastapa kimacharanyadamushya rupam.
Lavanya saram asamordham ananya siddham.
Lavanya saram asamordham ananya siddham.
Drigbhi pibantyanu savabhim navam durapam. Ekanta dhamma yashasa shriya aishvarasya.
Ekanta dhamma yashasa shriya aishvarasya.
Gopyastapa kimacharanya damushya rupam.
Gopyastapa kimacharanya damushya rupam.
Lavanya saram asamordham ananya siddham.
Lavanya saram asamordham ananya siddham.
Drigbhi pibantyanu savabhinavam durapam.
Drigbhi pibantyanu savabhinavam durapam.
Ekanta dhamma yashasa shriya aishvarasya.
Ekanta dhamma yashasa shriya aishvarasya.
Translation. The women of Mathura said, that's actually not part of the translation, that's just putting it in context. So, translation, what austerities must the gopis have performed? With their eyes they always drink the nectar of the form of Lord Krishna, which is the essence of loveliness and is not to be equaled or surpassed. That loveliness is the only abode of beauty, fame and opulence. It is self-perfect, ever fresh and extremely rare. Purport, this text from Srimad Bhagavatam was spoken by the women of Mathura when they saw Krishna and Balaram in the arena with King Kamsa's great wrestlers, Mushtika and Chanura. Gopyastapa kimacharanya damushya rupam lavanya saram asamordham ananya siddham drigbhif pibantyanu savabhinavam durapam. Ekanta dhamma yashasa shriya aishvarasya. The women of Mathura said, what austerities must the gopis have performed? With their eyes they always drink the nectar of the form of Lord Krishna, which is the essence of loveliness and is not to be equaled or surpassed. That loveliness is the only abode of beauty, fame and opulence. It is self-perfect, ever fresh, and extremely rare. This verse was spoken by the ladies of Mathura, seeing Krishna in the wrestling, Krishna and Balaram in the wrestling arena with Chanura and Mushtika. It appears that these were more elderly ladies who had the feelings of maternal affection toward Krishna rather than the younger ladies who would be attracted in a different way to Krishna because they were protesting that this is unfair, these big wrestlers with these small boys. It's not fair. It's against the principles of religion. We have to say something. If we don't say something, then we become implicated in this crime. It also appears from this verse that although now in retrospect, we know that although Krishna was supposed to go back to Vrindavan after having entered Mathura, actually he stayed in Mathura for much longer than was expected, and from there went to Dwaraka. But it appears from this that the ladies of Mathura, they weren't aware that Krishna was going to stay in their company and was expecting him to go back, because they say that the gopis of Vrindavan are so fortunate, they always see Krishna. We also find that the ladies of Mathura, they're pure conscious, in their pure consciousness, they're not envious of the gopis of Vrindavan, but they're praising the good fortune that they are more fortunate than us, and they're appreciating Krishna's transcendental form, which particularly in this month we meditate upon Namami Swaram Satchidananda Rupam. There's his offering obeisance to the Supreme Controller, whose form is eternal, full of bliss, fully conscious, full of knowledge. In this way, Krishna's form is described, and Krishna's form may be described in many ways. In fact, it goes on. Lasat Kundalang describes his form with the earrings, which are swinging here and there. Gokule Brajama, who's present in Gokul. This is not the Krishna who is... We won't find Yashodab Hiyalu Kaladhavamanam. We won't find Krishna in Mathura running away or in fear from Mother Yashoda and being tied up. These pastimes are unique to Vrindavan. Although elsewhere also, those who are devotees will appreciate the form of Krishna. Here Krishna's form is described as Lavanyasaram, the essence of all beauty, Asamurdvam. This term is applied to Krishna, every aspect of Krishna, that there's no equal and no one greater in any way than Krishna. So particularly that's this term is being applied in reference to the form of Krishna in this respect. But it can be applied also to his qualities, his majesty. Qualities, of course, include compassion, bhaktavatsalya, especially compassion for his devotees. Everything about Krishna is inimitable, unsurpassed. He's in a category of his own, which means ananya. There's no other like him. Here the word is used, ananya siddham. His form, Srila Prabhupada translates this as, Krishna's form is perfect by himself. He didn't have to go to any plastic surgery or perform austerities so that he could in the next life get a beautiful form. Krishna's always perfect, and ananya siddha can also mean uniquely perfect. There's no one like Krishna. In fact, that's true of every jiva, but also that each one is unique, but Krishna's uniqueness is all attractive, whereas the uniqueness of the jiva is not all attractive. So there's a major difference, even though everyone is an individual, but Krishna's individuality is in all respects greater than that. Every aspect of Krishna is much more attractive than that of anyone else, and in fact, if anyone else has any attractiveness, that attractiveness is only a slight reflection of the attractiveness of Krishna. As Srila Prabhupada would sometimes say, we praise the great intelligence of a great scientist, but what about the because he studied the universe and made some discoveries. Well, what about the scientist who made the intelligence of that person and made the universe? How much more intelligent is he who made the universe if someone can discover some fact about the universe and become so much praised, then what about he who made it in the first place? So Krishna, his form is here described, Lavanya Sarama Samodva Mananya Siddham. And there are others. Other appreciation. Ekanta Dhamma Yashasya Shriya Aishvarasya. He is the only abode of fame, beauty, and opulence. And along with appreciating Krishna, the ladies of Mathura, who in this way are showing, openly showing they don't appreciate Kamsa. Fortunately for them, Kamsa's about to die, so he would no longer be a source of fear for them. But they're also appreciating the gopis of Vrindavan, who constantly drink through their eyes the nectar of Krishna's form. This appreciation of Krishna is especially possible by women. Krishna is the Supreme Person. That is appreciated in Mathura. Krishna has now just come from Vrindavan to Mathura. And in Mathura and in Dwaraka and in Ayodhya and in Vaikuntha, Krishna is appreciated as the Supreme Person. And in this world also, in this material world, those who are devotees, they appreciate Krishna as the Supreme Person. He's the Supreme Controller. And persons who are in this material world who don't appreciate Krishna as the Supreme Controller, well, that's why they're in this material world. Those who do appreciate him, they come out of the material world. So we're always left with more people who don't appreciate. And then persons like Srila Prabhupada come from the spiritual world to inform those persons in the material world who are at least somewhat pious about the Supreme Controller, the Supreme Male. Male. So that is the way the universe runs on in terms of gender relationships, that the male is supreme in relationship to the female. That is the natural order throughout the whole universe. So appreciating that, understanding this point, we can come to the understanding that there is the Supreme Male, the Supreme Controller, the Supreme Powerful. Who is that? That is Vishnu, who also appears as Rama and as Krishna and as Matsya, Kurma, Varaha, and so on, and sometimes as Mohini, female form. But that's an unusual form of Vishnu. Otherwise, that's God in drag, so to speak. Drag means a man dressing up as a woman. He is the Supreme Controller, male, the females subordinate. That is the principle throughout the universe and in the spiritual world. And it is a symptom of Kali Yuga that females, the idea is there is that the female should be equal to the male or more. And things get all upset and upside down because it's against the natural order. But in Kali Yuga, everything is already so bizarre that if there's anything in order, it seems to be bizarre. And so when everything is so strange that females should be on top of the males, that seems normal, because everything else is so insane that they want to put the women on the heads of the men instead of vice versa. The women should be protected, which means subordinate. They should know their position in society. The men should take charge. In Kali Yuga, men have no strength, either physical or mental or any other. And so the women take over and it's all topsy-turvy. So that is the rule of the world, that men are in charge. That comes from Krishna originally, or from Vishnu. I'm saying Vishnu, yes. Krishna is an avatar of Vishnu, eighth avatar of Vishnu. Is that right? You're saying no. It says so in Shastra. How can you deny it? Everyone knows. Well, that's a fact. It's actually a fact. Krishna is an avatar of Vishnu. But, that's seeing Vishnu as supreme, that is correct. Krishna is manifestation of Vishnu. That's correct. Until we go to Vrindavan, then things are a little different. Who can appreciate the manliness of Krishna? The jiva can appreciate. The jiva, the supreme person, is Param Purush, and the jiva by nature is Prakriti. Purush means the enjoyer. Prakriti means that which is manipulated. So the Prakriti is meant for Purush. This is transcendental Sankhya philosophy. In the atheistic Sankhya philosophy, Purush and Prakriti have no relationship. There's no love. But the females, they can better appreciate. Men can appreciate in some way. They can appreciate his manliness, his heroism. But the women, they can appreciate the beauty of Krishna, the sweetness of Krishna. They are better situated to appreciate that. And that is there. In Mathura, the women especially are appreciating the form of Krishna. The men, they may appreciate Krishna's strength in defeating the wrestlers, but the women will appreciate the beauty, and they will appreciate the romantic feelings of the gopis of Vrindavan for Krishna. We find in this perverted reflection of the spiritual world that generally, well, it used to be, I don't know now because all the gender roles have got so mixed up. But it used to be that the men and the boys, they would like to hear stories of wars and battles and heroism. And the women, they like the movies or the novels about the romance, love stories. There are different ways Krishna will be appreciated. He's all around, all perfect, appeals to everyone. So this appreciation of Krishna's lavanya, his shriya, his beauty, that will be especially appreciated in Vrindavan. And those who know about Krishna in Vrindavan, where he is Satchidananda, Yashodabiyolu Kaladhavaman, running away in fear from Mother Yashoda, which is impossible in Mathura. Krishna doesn't run away out of fear from Mother Devaki. Rather, she's in fear and Krishna saves her from the fear of Kamsa. But in Vrindavan, Krishna is known as the original form of the personality of Godhead, because in Vrindavan more importance is given to Krishna's beauty, his sweetness, his male attractiveness. He is Purush there. He's Param Purush. He's the supreme male. But Vrindavan is dominated by the female attraction to Krishna. Elsewhere, Krishna's on top. As Rama, he's definitely in control of Sita. In Dwaraka, all the queens, they appreciate the beauty of Krishna. The most prominent queen or famous queen is Rukmini, who's so submissive to Krishna that even when he tries to goad her into becoming angry against him, she can't do so, and she simply faints at the prospect of being separated from Krishna. Satyabhama is there, but she's not much advertised. She's henpecking Krishna and scolding him, and in so many ways. But Rukmini is known as the most prominent. She's the first queen of Krishna. And Satyabhama comes in as number three, I believe. Jambavati comes in number two. And then Satyabhama after that. So, in Vrindavan, they're not such cultured people from the worldly point of view. Not very high caste, we can say. They don't have a very high culture. That we see that Uddhava, when he came to Vrindavan, his chariot stopped and all the gopis came and crowded around his chariot, which the cultured women of Dwaraka, they wouldn't do that. When Krishna entered Dwaraka, the women, they would see Krishna from a distance, from the top of the ramparts of the building, of the buildings. And even when Krishna went to meet his queens, out of shyness, they stood back and sent their sons to be greeted by Krishna. So they know in Dwaraka, they follow very well the Maryadam Marga. They observe the rules of propriety. But in Vrindavan, there's no such thing. Vrindavan is dedicated to loving Krishna in a unique way. That is, the women of Mathura, they can appreciate that to some extent, but they can't behave like that or live like that. They can appreciate from a distance. But Vrindavan, Krishna is there. He's Param Purush, but in a different way. Not that he's known as the controller of the universe or any such thing. When Mother Yashoda had the vision of Krishna within Krishna's mouth, herself and Krishna and all the planets and all the universes, she just started to think, well, maybe my son is Narayana, the Supreme Controller. And then that thought immediately left her mind as Krishna indicated that he wished to suck milk from her breast. So Krishna in Vrindavan becomes subordinate to women. In fact, the whole of Vrindavan is subordinate to the Yogamaya, Paurnamasi, who orchestrates everything there. Outside of Vrindavan, Yogamaya is associated with Subhadra Devi, but within Vrindavan, the Paurnamasi, the elderly woman who doesn't show herself much, but she's like the stage manager, stage manageress, orchestrating everything behind the scenes. Everything is going on in Vrindavan, she orchestrates for the sake of bringing Radha and Krishna together. And then sometimes again they separate. And then she brings them together. It's a very difficult thing to do, because although we hear about it happening all the time, but each time it happens, it's a great event, it's an unexpected event. Because there are so many restrictions placed on Radharani and the gopis, and it's impossible how she can meet Krishna even once, what to speak of again and again. That is organized by Paurnamasi, who's female. She's organizing everything. And Krishna, who is the supreme enjoyer, he enjoys life in Vrindavan, taking shelter. Yoga mayam upashrita. That's stated in the first verse of the Rasa Panchodhai, the five chapters describing the Rasleela of Krishna, that Krishna, seeing the beauty of the autumn moon rising, he wanted to dance and he took shelter of Yoga Maya to do. She has to arrange everything. So, although Krishna is the Supreme Lord, in Vrindavan, he's not. He's the supreme male, but the male here is seen as the supreme lover. And in loving affairs, who is supreme? That is the title of that book Gokul Chandra Prabhu gave. So the answer is Krishna. Who is supreme? Krishna. So anyone who actually studies Shastra, they'll have to conclude Krishna is supreme. But in Vrindavan, we know of Vrindavanishvari, that Radharani is supreme. And in fact, that there's that whole pastime of Radha being crowned as the queen of Vrindavan. So it's Vrindavan is very much a place where the female energy is most powerful, that Krishna himself becomes subordinate to that, who the greatest appreciation, the most intimate appreciation of Krishna will be by the female devotees. And here we're not talking about material bodies, but it's the spiritual female mood. Even the males, just like in Dandakaranya, the male rishis, seeing Lord Rama, they were attracted to his beauty and they wanted to have the particular form which is suitable for appreciating that beauty more and more. They had to take a female form, and Rama told them that, okay, all right, that you can do, but not now. Not in this form. You'll have to come again in a female form. And when Rama comes as Krishna, then he can accommodate any number of females who he interacts with, who can appreciate the beauty of his form in a way that is most appropriate for females. Again, we're talking about spiritual females here. The only we know the perverted reflection in this world. And that manner of appreciating Krishna's form, it cannot be the same for those who are males. So that's one way in which the female form that dominates everything in Vrindavan. And there's another aspect to the female character, two major aspects to the female character. One is that of loving a male, and the other is that of being a mother, especially to the male. The mother's affection is especially toward the male, and the father's generally has special affection for the female child. So we find in Vrindavan that there's Nanda and Yashoda, but Yashoda is all, they both love Krishna unlimitedly, but Yashoda's love for Krishna, that is more praised. Her motherly affection is known to be, it's although Nanda's affection is unlimited, but hers is more unlimited. And therefore she is praised. Naimam varincho nabhavo nashir apyanga sangshaya prasadam lebhire gopi yat tat prapavi muktidat. She is praised that what mercy she got from Krishna by being able to tie him up, that is unimaginable for Brahma, that is unimaginable for Shiva, that is unimaginable even for Lakshmi, who, she's also female, but she is part of his body, but Krishna is part of Yashoda's body. He came from Yashoda's body. So Gopika Sutta, that comes in the next verse. Nayam sukhapo bhagavan dehinam gopika sutta jnaninam chatma bhutanam yattad prapya vimukti. I'm getting the two lines mixed up there. This ability to control Krishna is, again, it's completely beyond the imagination, not possible for those who are in the bodily concept of life, for those who are speculating in terms of not this, not that. So beyond philosophy, beyond even proper behavior, there is the land of love, which necessitates there must be male and there must be female. This is, again, Gyaninam. They cannot understand. The persons who are simply speculating on the nature of the Supreme, they'll say, Supreme must be one. Well, that's a fact. Supreme must be one. Asamurdva. No one is equal to, no one is greater. But that one is not simply some entity or some phenomenon. That one is the Supreme Person. And there's no meaning to being a person if one is just like a machine. Person means feelings. The feelings that culminates in love, and love means male and female. The highest love is that between, there can be, of course, there's love between male and male also. We find in Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna, speaking of his loving exchanges with Krishna. Hey Krishna, hey Yadava, hey Sakha. He would call out to Krishna. So that love is there, but the supreme love is that between male and female. So then the supreme is one, yes, the supreme is two. Must be. And supreme is many. Many because love, there's no end to it. So who is supreme? Krishna is supreme. But superior to Krishna is love of Krishna. He becomes subordinate to love. Therefore, that astonishing statement is that Krishna, although he's the supreme, he becomes subordinate to the love of his devotees. Therefore, bhakti is greater than Krishna. This is the whole message of Chaitanya Charitamrita from which we're reading today, extracting from Srimad Bhagavatam. This essence of Srimad Bhagavatam is Nigama Kalpa Taro Galitam Palam, the ripened fruit of the desire tree of the Vedic knowledge. Sarvaveta Itihasanam Saram Saram Udahritam. It is the essence of the essence of all the Vedic literature. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he revealed that essence. Otherwise, it wouldn't be seen. Now we can see it. Now we can understand it. Otherwise, we wouldn't be able to understand it. Maybe you've seen there are several drawings which, if you see from one perspective, it looks at something else, but if you just adjust your way of looking, then it will look like something else. There's one picture, drawing of what looks like an hourglass. We used to have egg timers. The sand will drop through from the top chamber to the bottom chamber. So something looks like something like that. But if you look again, and just adjust your way of looking, you'll see it looks like two faces with two noses pointing at each other. There's another drawing of, if you look at it one way, it'll look like a woman looking away from you, and if you look at it another way, you'll see an old woman with her head down, seen from a side profile. So unless someone points it out, you might not be able to see. Or there's a cube. If you see the picture of a cube, if you look at it one way, it looks like it's pointing downward. If you look, not exactly look at it another way, but just adjust your vision of what you expect it to be, then you'll see it's pointing upward. So these may be seen as some kind of optical illusions or something like this. But in the same way, we can see Srimad Bhagavatam, Shastra Chakshu, we're supposed to see through the eye of Shastra. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gives us this vision by which we can see in a different way altogether. That sometimes happens on the material platform. And then, just like for instance, there was what is now called classical or Newtonian physics. And then Einstein and others came along and started looking at the world in a different way. And now scientists, at least those scientists in certain fields, actually in all fields, they can see more. They can understand more. I'm not sure if they're understanding it exactly properly. Of course, they won't ever. But this is just a material example, how someone sees something in a different way and points it out, then others can see it also. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has pointed out, Premapumartho Mahan. Even though all the Vedic literature speak of dharma, kama, artha, moksha, of dharma, proper behavior in synchronization with the universe, material desire, wealth, liberation from the world. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu pointed out that these are not the real purposes of the Vedas. The real purpose is prema, Krishna prema. And what is the ultimate limit of that? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu brought that understanding beyond the understanding of Krishna as the Supreme Person, the Supreme Male, and gave the understanding of Krishna as the Supreme Male, yes, but he may be the Supreme Male, but he's subordinate to the Supreme Female, or more precisely, subordinate to the love of the Supreme Female. So this is the perfection of feminism, which is found in the Krishna's inner chambers. That's not meant for everyone. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is himself the Supreme Person, but having accepted his insufficiency, he has accepted Radha Bhava Dyuti Suvalitam. He has accepted the bodily lustre and the feelings of Srimati Radharani. He's actually a woman in male form, the supreme loving woman. So this is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings, yeah, the perfection of feminism, and in this world, feminism as it's manifested is the perverted reflection. Although in the spiritual world, the female love for Krishna is the source of the highest bliss beyond any imagination. In this world, it simply causes all kinds of trouble. So in this world, dharma should be followed. There is a place where Yogamaya, there's a female who coordinates everything perfectly for the pleasure of Krishna. In that setting, feminism is perfect and appropriate, and appropriateness is not the main consideration. In fact, appropriateness or proper behavior, that is deliberately flouted to facilitate the parakiya bhav, the feelings of Krishna with abhiman, the feeling that Krishna is and his lovers are doing something wrong against societal rules. But everything is orchestrated by Yoga Maya, and in this world there is Mahamaya, where we try to imitate Krishna, and there are rules in which to follow, in which one can imitate Krishna in a somewhat civilized manner. One can, for instance, get married. But as Srila Prabhupada pointed out, those who criticize Krishna for having more than 16,000 queens, they think themselves very moral because they only have one wife, but actually they're immoral because they're thinking that this is my wife. But that is immoral because the wife is to be enjoyed by Krishna, not by you. You have no right to enjoy even one wife. And for Krishna, 16,000 is only a sample because he's the supreme male dominating over all females. So what's 16,000 to him? So this is a completely different perspective, but which is not understandable in the world of dharma, which is also required to be followed, and if followed properly under proper guidance, then that will gradually lead us or push us. The Vedic principles push us toward Krishna. And Bhagavad Gita is the final push. When someone's ready, like Arjuna, they can take the final push and get pushed. Surrender to Krishna. Hare Krishna. Any question, please? Yeah. Oh, I'm supposed to read it. I don't know. As an intelligent woman who has a law degree, I was expecting Krishna consciousness to reflect what I had read in the Bhagavad Gita about how everybody has a soul, and anybody who doesn't see that as equal degrades themselves. All it did was to make me feel ashamed for my bodily covering, so trying to make me more attached to it. such as saying women has half the brain size of men. But then saying female devotees are intelligent and not ordinary women, does that mean that their brain suddenly grows when they become a devotee? Then reading stories about the love between Radha and Krishna, but then he needed to make a point that Radha isn't any woman we know. In the Krishna book he says that women are less intelligent because less philosophical. And it says more women than men will be found in temples. Then in talks he says, I think this is too much of a topic for just at the end of class. Women are less intelligent because there are less female scientists. If even the fact is forgotten that women in India couldn't have an education and had to marry young, and even Marie Curie was refused to entry to universities because of being female, he then says it isn't good to be too philosophical, and intelligence isn't about education, because intelligence is about recognizing about what God is. If he said before that more females go to temples, doesn't that mean that women are more intelligent? I'm not some feminist who really thinks women are more intelligent, but trying to point out that his logic doesn't make sense. Even women devotees I met were going on about men being more intelligent with spirituality, but one woman said her husband complains that she cares more about Krishna consciousness than him. Another woman I met said she doesn't even tell her husband she goes because he would be worried of her being involved in it. Then lots of other women were single, but that doesn't seem to care. Single women were compared to prostitutes. Plus lots of his explanations of passages seem to have his own issues and opinions about women that have nothing to do with the original text, such as Srila Prabhupada's introduction to Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita here. Watch, I don't have the internet connection to see. He seems to be blaming women for men liking them. Why isn't there any mention about things males do to females? Weren't the children kicked in the face by Maya, by the ISKCON male pedophiles? Aren't women in abusive relationships also affected? Aren't the girls forced into marriage at 11 affected? Oh, this is the paragraph. It is a fact that we are constantly being kicked by Maya, just as the male ass is kicked in the face by the she ass when she comes for sex. Similarly, cats and dogs are always fighting and whining when they have sex. Even an elephant in the jungle is caught by the use of a trained she-elephant who leads him into a pit. We should learn... This is actually from the 11th canto, I believe. This example is given in the 11th canto. A she-elephant who leads him into a pit. We should learn by observing these tricks of nature. Maya has many ways to entrap us, and the strongest shackle is the female. I've spoken about this at some length elsewhere. I'm not exactly sure where. Yeah, self-realization is generally a male undertaking. Krishna consciousness is open to men and women, and as Srila Prabhupada notes, this women go more to the women have more simple faith and in generally attraction to Krishna, whereas men tend to be more philosophically inclined to search for the absolute truth. We should always remember that male and female in this material world, they are different coverings over the soul, that both men and women in this material world are in Maya. The male form is especially meant for self-realization. The female form is designed by nature for having children. That women in the modern Western world in general are not very much encouraged to undertake that role will be the, or and already is the undoing of Western civilization. That's a long discussion, but if you don't procreate, then you're overtaken demographically. I've spoken about this at length in that seminar, Women, Masters or Mothers, how with the female form comes a certain kind of psychology that women, they need psychologically, they have a requirement to have children, to have motherly love, which is not conducive for the philosophical pursuit of self-realization, but at the same time that they have, again we're talking about female, perverted reflection, male-female in this material world, but women in this world, in that sense, they tend to be or they're encouraged to undertake that role of being mothers. So they may not be so much intellectually developed. Of course, they may be also, alongside with being mothers, as we see, for instance, Queen Kunti made beautiful prayers to Krishna, which are also highly philosophical. But that simplicity, that is the essence or the main qualification to be a devotee of Krishna. Pursuing self-realization and philosophically may trap one on the intellectual platform. And it may be very difficult to come from that platform to completely surrender to Krishna. So that is an advantage, but of course there's also a disadvantage that goes with that simplicity, is that one may be very easily misled also. So anyway, I spoke about this in some detail in that Women, Masters or Mothers seminar. As far as Srila Prabhupada apparently contradicting himself, well, we have to understand also that not only Srila Prabhupada, but in Shastra itself, words are used in different ways in different contexts. So what exactly Srila Prabhupada means by intelligence in different contexts may not be exactly the same thing. Basically, we can say that intelligence means well, there are many facets of intelligence, but in the essence it is to understand what is for one's own, what is best for one's own self-interest and for that of others, and to resolve to act accordingly. So that is taught in Shastra. Oh, you do have internet access. You are on the internet. Oh, I see. Okay. Anyway, she quoted it there. There is a long section in the Bhagavatam where it talks about how woman is the form of Maya for the male, and then there's a whole long section, and at the end it says, at the end of that it says, this applies equally for males to women, vice versa. But Shastra is generally spoken to men, who then are supposed to teach it to their wives. It's very difficult for people raised in modern society in the West to imagine traditional society. They think the insane society that they're living in is normal. Like people in a madhouse think it's normal to be insane, and anyone who's actually sane, they think is insane. So the West and India, increasingly now also, as we were driving last night back from the program through Hyderabad, I was thinking to myself, what's the difference between this and any city in the West? People are just living their lives, working and some sense gratification. That's it. It's the same cat and dog society, no higher thought. Isn't it? What are people thinking of? They're just thinking of making money and then spending it and enjoying themselves. It's the same. Kimanyat kama haitukam. What else is there in the world but simply enjoying it? So we need to re-establish this spiritual culture. It's not just a matter of how we behave and how we live, but the whole way that we think about the world and how we, a whole approach to life. Hare Krishna. You have a question also? Yeah, I want to keep. atheistic Sankhya. I just mentioned it, and then we get into that. That's huge, huge topic. Atheistic Sankhya, there's Purush and Prakriti, but they have no relation. Purush is completely inactive, and that's supreme materialistic feminism, that Prakriti is active. But how is that? How do they come into being? What's the underlying principle? There's no underlying principle to it. So that's the basic mistake. Buddhism also, the basic mistake. They say, well, this is like this and that's like that, but why? They have no answer. It's just for them, it is. It's just like that. So that Brahma is the underlying principle of everything, that's the perfect philosophy. But then the impersonalists misunderstand to think that that must, because that underlies everything, then it must be impersonal. Anyway, what were you going to say? How can you understand it? I don't understand it. It doesn't make any sense. Krishna doesn't personally get involved. Well, Krishna does as Lord Shiva, who oversees the material energy. The aspect of the Supreme who gets involved and oversees the material world is Lord Shiva, who's the husband of Maya personified. Krishna is, he's also within the heart of everyone, upadrashtanumanta. So, he's not totally aloof. He doesn't get personally involved with the workings of material nature. Unless, well, for his devotees he does. Otherwise, people are just going on in this world, disconnected from Krishna. So, Hare Krishna. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Hare Krishna.